So, you know, we know, you know, when Inanna, longer myth, you know, but when she gets back from the underworld, which is kind of where we are right now, because Venus is rising as the morning star, she's out of the underworld. When Inanna, which the Inanna myth is the Venus orbital cycle, you know, myths and fairy tales are how cultures passed on their science, which is why it is such a rude and violent ripping when you go, science here, fairy tales and myth there. And we go, no, no, the fairy tales and the myth were how knowledge and science were passed on, encoded in the symbols of the story. You know, and if you just have knowledge, you're going to do terrible sociopathic things because you won't have the kinship and the guiding, you know, wisdom that we're all in this thing together. You know, it's why I love some wag's comment going, no, we want the D.H. Lawrence Laboratory, right? You know, it's like, what is all this tormenting animals going? And the sea slug, when we gave it a shock, and that's amazing, and then we rang the bell and didn't give it a shock, and it still went into trauma, isn't that fabulous? It's like, you bastards, you know, why not give it an orgasm and some chocolate? Going, ooh, ooh. You know, why not learn from pleasure and kinship rather than torturing, right? If our science is torturing, you know, torture runs through the whole thing. Whatever we do in a micro way is going to run through the whole thing. Why has our learning been divorced from compassion until now? And how do we want to reinvent everything? What did everything want to be before it became corrupt? You know, and even in its originating impulse, what is it meant to be? See, I like completely redefining the position of police humans. Meaning they should be anti-inflammatory agents equipped with ginger and turmeric tea, you know, and cannabis honey. Sir, I notice you're a little distressed. Have some tea with some cannabis honey in it. There, I hope you feel better. Oh, tell me your problems and I will tell you mine. And there we go. Yeah, a complete redefining. I mean, we're hiring them to be shamans to walk the edge of life and death, and we haven't given them the story. Going, they're like, no, we're not supposed to kill people. No, you are good fish. You are good. You are strong enough to be gentle. Wuzza. Here. Massage sessions for you in the community was, you know, here's your story, right? You weren't given a guiding story. You know, people want their guiding story. Again, something I use a lot, I just like it so much, from Conscious Parenting Magazine. We gather from everywhere, Law and Order, Ageless Wisdom, Inanna, Conscious Parenting Magazine. it's all speaking to us. But it said, you do not say to your five-year-old, oh, please put on your socks because mommy's got to get to work. Because your five-year-old has no prefrontal cortex. You go, we're putting on our socks. Yep, yeah, there we are, there we go. Here we go. You know, no, not that, over. We're directing the traffic. And that's how we want to deal with politicians, because they have no prefrontal cortex either. So you go, we're cleaning up the environment. No, we're cleaning. Yeah, that's where we're going. Right? It is time for all of us, in myriad ways, to be willing to assume cultural narrative lead in an all-inclusive, irresistible story. This is the story. This is what we're doing. Come on. Here you go. You know, woof, woof, want to play. And if you don't, that's fine. We're going this way. Remember James Carse's fantastic book, Finite and Infinite Games. A finite game is about winning. An infinite game is about keeping everything in play. And he said the Renaissance was not against. It was not a finger-waggy, you know, bad. It was like irresistible, inclusive, you know, call to human ingenuity to participate in a flowering of culture. And that's what we want to be: agents, magnetizers, you know, inviters, you know, from the thing that's going down to the thing that's coming up, you know. So there's all of that. No, I love Terry Pratchett. I love his writings about. This is from Wintersmith, late great Terry Pratchett. He died a year ago, but a great animist, a great Taurus animist. Everything's alive, even. A moan escaped his lips, happy to be free, right? Even the moan, I mean, everything's alive. It makes it more intimate and dear, even if it's a little demon, you know, if it's all alive, you know. So they're the we free men, who are rascals. Rascals are not quite the same as tricksters. They sometimes come through and sometimes don't, but wonderful. And in Wintersmith, it's a brilliant novel, but the Feagles, the we free men, also known as Feagles, the leader of them is called Rob Anybody, which is charming. And he's leading a young hero to the underworld. You know, this doesn't look like the entrance to the underworld, says the young hero to the wee free men. Ah, any cave can be the way in, said Rob Anybody. But you must have the knowing of the cross step. He stuck out his arms behind him, bent at the elbows. He leaned backwards, sticking out one leg to keep his balance. Then he wiggled his foot in the air a few times, leaned forward, and vanished as soon as his foot touched the ground. The heroic team all enters the underworld by this mode of transport, because there's reasons we will want to go to the underworld. And one says he's expecting it to be hotter. "Oh, you're thinking of hells," said Rob Anybody. "They tend to be on the toasty side, it's true. Underworlds are more the gloomy sort. It's where folks end up when they're lost, ye ken. Maybe dead when they shouldn't be, or they fall doon a gap in the worlds and dinna ken the way. Some of them don't even ken where they are, poor souls. There's an awful lot of that kind of thing. There's no a lot of laughs in the underworld. This one used to be called Limbo, ye ken, because the door was very low." Okay, looks like it's gone. Looks like it's gone way downhill since we was last here. And then there are the encounters with the Dementors, right, with the Bogles. Rob's advice is think of something solid, will you? Because the Bogles or the Dementors will suck all the hope out of you, right? Think of something solid, will you? I'm not joking. Whatever you do, do not wish or regret or hope. Those are too weak. You know, the Bogles eat your memories. Your thoughts is real to them. Wishes and hope are like food. They're vermin, really. This is what happens. We go, all right, well, that's fun. But it's, again, the journey to the underworld consciously taken is part of the detective novel dynamic. So we have myths, metaphoric animations of intrinsic intelligence in nature, templates that we offer, that we invite to be animated. Well, everything is fair play. Nothing's so sacred that it doesn't want reverent irreverence. So we've offered these templates of goddesses and gods, you know, but we say, well, the divine wants to be liberated from past confines of human imagination. You know, come up with other templates, you know. Or where they've gotten snookered, going, the gods fighting really seems like late colonialism. You know, no, don't think so, into the cauldron. Again, these are principles of nature with which we want to connect. Fairy tales, more intimate, you know, to the community. Careful living in a particular place. This tree, this badger, or the long journey, seeking the treasure, returning home defeated, gazing into the coal fire, and then going, what's that in the ashes? It was the treasure one was looking for all along, but you had to go on the long, discouraging journey to come back to where you were. And that's very much the Jupiter cycle that we're in right now. You know, all the journeys. You know, and Venus and Neptune opposite Jupiter says, really, there's no such thing. Wait, let's question everything. No such thing as unrequited love. There's unrequited obsession, you know, but love, Venus, Neptune goes, love, there we go. And then, so we have myths, fairy tales, detective novels. Well, we do. Yeah, and they're very old. They're very old. They go back to 231 BC is the oldest one I found in China, written on bamboo paper, which apparently really holds up. And it's the same deal. The purpose of the magistrate within all of us was to descend into the underworld in order to restore human affairs to be in accord with the dictates of heaven and earth. You go, those are the mythic themes. And an important thing in all the fairy tales also is that because of each one of our dedication, the dedication serves as a protective shield. Remember, Gurdjieff in the Russian Revolution was taken his school of, you know, through the midst of violent Russian Revolution, and they knew how to be invisible. They knew how to wend their way through violence in a way in which they could. Well, it was Gurdjieff, so we don't know if they were always up to good, but we could be, you know. But again, the internal dedication is like a protective shield. So in detective novels, when up to no good bad people meet the dedicated detective, they go, "I was going to rob you and kill you, but I can sense that you're the real thing. You're not a con, right? So I want to join your team, but I have underworld skills that you will need." Now, this is going on right now. Again, there's fantastically trippy things going on Fox News in which they invite, you know, a guest that they think they know what the guest is going to say, you know, and they get schooled, right? The Fox News reader, you know, said, "Oh, we have somebody here to explain, you know, why Bernie Sanders is dangerous and socialism is a great evil in the world. Here you are, Mr. Expert on why socialism is evil." And the person says, "Well, let me give you a little history of socialism. It's not always evil. It's evil when it's a totalitarian, but then everything is evil." And the Fox News person said, "Let's not get, you know, bogged down in the facts. You know, let's that's too much learning. You know, you know, because your family, you know, were the political prisoners in Venezuela. And he goes, yes, yes, yes. So, you know, so you must, you know, tell us more about how socialism is evil. And he goes, well, it's a complex thing, you know. But I will tell you, I just made the, says the guy, the anti-socialist guy, I just made the largest political contribution possible to Bernie Sanders. And the Fox News person was, what? And even the crawl line underneath says, you know, socialism is evil, says expert, you know. They didn't, you know. And he goes, yeah, you know, because Hillary Clinton's dodgy. She's taken, you know, so much money from dictators, you know, and which, you know, all over the world, you know. And so I'd rather have, you know, yes, a democratic socialist than somebody, you know, in cahoots with dictators, you know. And the Fox News was like, and that's enough of you. Okay. And then the Fox business station had, I've forgotten his name. You can shout it out if you know, if you saw the clip. But it's the guy that Gecko in Wall Street was modeled on, the biggest hooverer, kind of financial, you know, kind of sociopathic inhaler of things. And he is schooling the Fox interviewers, like, here's why there's a recession, because normal people have less, they can buy less, you know, whatever. And they're like, well, then, so who are you voting for? And he's like, Bernie Sanders is the most sensible financial person to choose for. Then they're like, okay, moving right along. Okay, anyway, so we go, who brought what to this party? You know, again, it's surprising, tricky time, you know, and unusual allies, and we don't, oh, that person's a bad person, but we speak to the part of them that we want to invite, you know, into this dynamic mix. Demons into allies. Remember, in Tibetan Buddhism, Milarepa, great Tibetan Buddhist saint, was a murderer. He was a murderer and a highwayman, right? So this realm of, you know, woof woof wanna play, even Mr. Up to No Good or Miss Up to No Good, you know, and again, willingness to cooperate with everything, with everything. So, so we got an opportunity to pour some things into the cauldron, and I do want to leave time for us to cahoot. I will. So I like throwing supporters into the cauldron because supporters tend to become more like the shadow of whomever they support, and we ladle out collaborators. So we're collaborators with Hillary, if that's your choice, or Bernie, or Trump, maybe. Okay. but a willingness to converse with everybody and to invite. You know, so liberating language. I love putting liberating in front of everything, right? Because it's got a fabulous double entendre. You know, it's my friend Pat who has, you know, a site called Liberating Christianity, meaning the liberating aspects of Christianity and liberating Christianity from its tyranny. Liberating democracy. Put liberating in front of your name, you know. Liberating Sally. Liberating whatever. Liberating liberating language. You know, and people often say, how long will we fight? And I go, as long as we keep using that metaphor, you know, again, the word fight is, you know, Johannes Trickster says, we are big gods, we don't really care what you guys do. We care the manner in which you do it, that it be from freedom and choice, from so many possibilities, that we have a rich linguistic vocabulary and metaphoric realm ever expanding from which to draw. You know, so we can use the word fight, we don't have to tiptoe around, but we want to use it from many possibilities, no default settings. So, because so many of our team go, we're going to fight global warming, we're going to fight the thing, we're going to fight the long struggle, we're going to fight it, you know, it's like, that's a kind of bespelling. It's amazing that people do so well while bespelling themselves. You know, again, the word protest means to grab your balls and affirm something. That's what it does. It means pro in favor of testes. It comes from Leviticus, right? So it's why women can't testify, but we can ovify. We can ovify. So we want to provify, although it sounds like a pharmaceutical. But but it means to affirm. So it was protest against the war, right? To affirm against the thing, but you're already doing a U-turn and losing energy, you know. And then the against was dropped, so you protest the war, which means you're affirming the thing, you know. And you know, these might seem small, but it's again realms of just playing, because ritual magic is always just lining things up so that our language, our metaphor, and our story are in accord with our dedication. That we learn from our, you know, a permaculture team, that we derive metaphors from the garden and from the animal world, you know, that quality. And that our language be, you know, I can cross the line, because how else would you know where it was? I want to throw the phrase divine feminine into the cauldron, because it's like, oh, God, it's so boring. You know, it's like a friend of mine says, what if the idea of matriarchy is a patriarchal concept? And I go, that's fun. You know, as opposed to actual equality, right? So just playing, woof, woof, wanna play. Some people take offense, you know, but it depends. I mean, there can be good forms of that. I want to honor a late great ally who really came through. I had a difficult tangle with a rabbi once after a talk because I was sort of, you know, dissing the Abrahamic religions. And he came up and he said, I've never been so insulted in all my life. And I go, the evening is young. wait. And then, so see, if even one of you leaves jolly, that's good too, going, So, but I do want to honor Rabbi White, that somebody brought him to my house, just thought we should meet. Incredible, head of rabbinical studies at Georgetown University, a big deal guy, very playful, and very learned in magic, Egyptian magic, Kabbalistic magic, a really interesting person. I just learned that he died. But I want to do a shout out to him, because I said, Rabbi White, you know, for me, I think of traditional religion and the Old Testament religions is basically like shipwrecks on which barnacles and occasionally beautiful corals have grown. He goes, I love that. That's perfect. I go, you are a trickster guy. You are an important rabbi, playful guy. And see, again, when you it was a risk. It was a risk. You know, and he's like, no, he was like, he twinkled. He liberated, you know. He loved that. He was like, woof, woof. You know, and we go, so it's really like the best to create a climate where the truth, even the dodgy truth, or maybe not even the truth, the for instance, woof woof, is it can come up and it's like it's a little dangerous, right? But when the other person takes it and plays with it, it's like it's the best. You know, or when somebody's doing a you know an annoying dingbat thing, you know, and you go, we could just go resentful and contribute to the you know the con story going on of like secret resentment, which wastes our time. You know, or you could bring it up. Compost, herumphitude composter first, really very important because you know when the Scorpio part of all of us says, "I was very polite to that person and they flipped out," we go, "No, wait a minute." You were like, "Hi, how are you? I think you're a dingbat." You know, and see, everybody knows the energetic. We're in the energetic realm right now. Everybody knows the energetic truth, you know. And when you go, "Hi, how are you?" You know, then people, you know, and then again, so that's why we want our herumphitude composter, because we want the compost melodrama, right? And ladle out, you know, the adventure, the high drama, the high inclusive drama of the transformation of culture. So yeah. So another fun thing for me is. I want to throw the word trauma into the cauldron. I've been at so many groups, and even entheogenic groups, and I'm an entheogenic enthusiast, because I think this whole election year is like one psychoactive trip. And the skills learned in entheogenic journeying, whether you've done that or not, you can get the kind of gist of it. Because at first, you know, it's like, oh okay. You learn how to navigate with that. But even at a group where people are going, oh, my trauma, I don't even remember what my trauma was, but I know it was like when I was four, and anyway, okay, and I go, how about next time you're tempted to use the word trauma, you replace it with the phrase, my dangerous, beautiful assignment. You know, and some people are like, no, you know, and then they come back the next day going, that was quite interesting. So, you know, and then people do it, and you go, ooh, you get an interesting release, because you're no longer, see, now you're not a martyr victim, you're a hero, right? You know, the model being that all of us parachuted, you know, with our missions, you know, into this world with a dedication to do good now. You know, land me in circumstances where I will learn everything that needs healing in the world. We have an opening in Dayton. Here you go, it's perfect. There you go. So you don't want to go, oh, the trauma of Dayton. It's like, you asked for Dayton, you know. Call and response, like no sense, you know, getting, you know, martyr points by complaining for what you asked for. It's perfect, you know, and perfect doesn't mean perfect, it means it's perfect. You know, we wonder how it's perfect, you know, this kerfuffle, you know, because we can go, no, the computer's not working. It's like, so go outside, you know, willingness to cooperate. You're going, no, I'm going to stay here and get frustrated and angry and then I'm going to vote for Trump and, you know. I'm also extremely in favor. All right, here I want to cross the line. I want to throw the word wound into the cauldron, wound as a metaphor. It's had a 50-year run, for God's sake. You know, do we know no other metaphors? Because then it's like my wound, and my wound's bigger than your wound. And then you get into suffering credentials. And we go, no, unless you're bleeding and on the way to the hospital. You know, I want to throw a wound into the cauldron, to this eclipse cauldron, blah, blah, blah. And ladle out some other more fun things, you know. Many other words, we want to prime the pump so there's no habit. Habit is dangerous in a dangerous world. You want it to be, again, no prison for the unexpected. New words, new framing. And the only news to trust really is the mythic news. I like also Trumpelstiltskin fulfills fairy tale destiny by growing red-faced with peak, stomping on floor and plunging into the redemptive underworld. There we go. Woof woof, wanna play. Ashe, right? Yeah, bless his heart, you know. And I like priming the pump of everybody write headlines, write the desirable headlines. It's like fabulous children's literature, the Bunny Planet books by Rosemary Wells, highly recommended to be on your, you know, on your bookshelf next to, you know, the Bhagavad Gita and everything. It's far beyond the earth and stars, 20 light years south of Mars, spins the gentle bunny planet, and the bunny queen is Janet. Come in, she says, for here's the day that should have been. And it's so, it's Neptunian reversal magic. It's fabulously drawn. You know, it's a little creature child that's had a terrible day and, you know, got sick at school and dad didn't say goodnight and everybody was grumpy and whatever, parents getting divorced, voting for Trump. I mean, whatever. And then they go off to the bunny planet where they redo the whole day. Here's the window, as it should have been, in rhyme. And my favorite's the lighthouse. They're very short, but they're wonderful. So it's like bunny planet. We have so many resources going. Because, see, once we introduce these with our friends, you know, you can go, oh, time to go to the bunny planet, eh? for here's the news that should have been. You know, situation's so dire, we can't afford the luxury of realism. You know, so there. An oldie but goodie, but, so we want to snap the trance, right? Hey, and direct the flow. Hey, over here, there we go. To ourselves as well. You know, when we get into, you know, I found, personal weather is not always collective weather, but it's kind of satisfying. Right before the eclipse on March 8th, you know, there was forming what's called a grand square in mutable signs, which is very kind of nervous energy, like, and my own demons of procrastination and lying to myself were quite up, going, I can get up early and write a book in an hour, it'll be fine, yes, and then going, oh my God, the grown-ups are angry, oh, it's terrible, okay. So there was a lot of kind of wiredness, which is why I posted on our Facebook page, anybody else feeling a little edgy and people going, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And it's like, oh, phew, it's not just me. I feel much better. It's everybody's demons are dancing. But then also, you know, what I was teaching now and in the 7-week course, I was going, God, this stuff is really useful. I'm getting a lot out of this course I'm teaching. Going, if I actually am not a con and actually do the homework I'm telling people to do, it's like, oh, that's much better. It actually works. It works, you know, to bless, to dedicate, to open our journals at random pages going, whoa, because we're in such a synchronous field that whatever we do is how the big picture is going to speak to us. And we're heading into this wild time right now, but where our inner life, we meet our inner life in outer synchronicity. So it's very good to equinox, to gather, going, what parts of my psyche are up for redemption, and what parts do I want to really animate? But whatever we do, whatever language or whatever practice, whatever, is how it'll speak to us. So when I was telling our team to, you know, go over, journal bibliomancy, I'm still in the 80s. I just had a random pile of journals. Not everybody keeps journals, you know. But boy, I really did, you know, a million years ago. And I would just sort of open it up and read, like, oh, that person. And they'd call on the phone right then. I go, wow, how about this, you know? And just, I mean, so whatever we do is this call and response. You know, we do know the feeling of, you know, sometimes calling out, going, hello, you know, and there's nothing coming back, right? And you go, oh, perhaps we are just alone, pathetic weenies in the face of a vast, uncaring universe, you know. But there's times what we're heading into where you go, hello, and there's like, hello, right? So it's like, all right, you know? And it's, you know, dangerous in a good way. You know, dangerous in a good way, so snapping the trance. So I do love the oldie but goodie, but it's again, we want to practice. It's from, you know, ally Eddie Izzard, right, who says, Star Trek, a very advanced civilization, and yet their phasers only had two settings, stun or kill, right? He said, we need many, many more phaser settings, right? You have a phaser in your magic backpack under your chair with your Harumphitude composter and your goat, who's your Saturn, and other important things. But your phaser, you can add settings to it. So Eddie Izzard primes the pump by saying, the left kettle on at home setting. I will kill you. Oh, wait a minute. Okay. The sudden interest in botany setting. I will kill you. Oh, wow, look at the moss. Ooh. You know, and add your thing, you know. The fascinating thing. Many, many more settings that are liberating. Again, satire liberating, sarcasm imprisoning. You know, mean, sarcasm means to bite. Satire is a liberating art. It can be spicy, but it's fundamental dedication is to liberating, you know, and that's part of that dynamic. So, hunger, the hungry ghost Khan within us all. You know, Ho'oponopono, how to heal the world by healing within, going, is there a hungry ghost, you know, a hungry hoovering ghost in us? You know, it's like ancient Buddhist texts, they ask the Buddha, you know, by what is the world polluted, Shariputra? He goes, by greed, by hunger. You know, everywhere. That is the pollution. That is the source of pollution. I just want to stick in a little bit on the art of attribution, right? Because here we are in the modern Facebook world, and I've noticed myself and others, people come and just hoover chunks of words, and as though it were their own, we've lost quotation marks. And because it's all like, whoa. And I go, well, no, actually, you know, I said that, or that person said that, attribution. They're like, everything's free. I go, there's a flag on that play, tyranny masquerading as liberation, 5-yard penalty declined, ball back in play. And I say, to not attribute where we got something from is the linguistic equivalent of genetically modified food. Because you're cutting the story lineage, right? You're reducing intimacy. Because there are people I quote all the time, and I aspire to do it, even though it's kind of years. Like, you know, Steve Behrman, I got the phrase tantrum yoga from him. I've used it for 20 years. Sometimes I don't always attribute. Him saying, the answer to the drug problem, improve reality. And I go, he said that. And yes, we could say, I could have thought of it myself, but he said that. And again, it keeps the lineage and the story and our story lineage. And, you know, and it's been interesting because with people, you know, in the class and whatever, you know, people going, oh, and they're sending stuff out. You know, and without shame. I mean, I once had somebody I sent out a 2012 kind of mythic newsletter, and somebody sent me their newsletter that was my newsletter, but with their name on it. But they sent it to me, right? So they didn't. I go, well, wait a minute. And they go, well, I don't believe that prayers can be copyrighted. I'm like, composter. You know, and then they said, I could have thought of it myself. And it's like, there's 4 paragraphs. composter. And that's why I've really kind of worked on it, which is, what is it? You know, yes, everything should be free, right? But the attribution is a form of ally etiquette. This is where this came from, and this person said this, and this person said this, and I say this, and I pass it on to you. Also because, you know, with other people and with myself, a lot of the phrases I come up with, they're long crafted. You know, they have a whole thing, and when they get, you know, kind of kidnapped, I go, they're very lonely. They're very lonely without their story context, because I know, I love them like little animals, and they're like, oh, they got kidnapped. So that's my little pitch on the restoration of quotation marks and attribution as part of the dynamic, you know, so that we are, you know, we're doing the Ho'oponopono, which is we are healing the hoovering, hungry ghosts within us all, going, no, that you know, how wonderful, it's wonderful to quote people. So that's my put over there. And then how to feed hungry ghosts. You know, what did they want to be? What are they really hungry for? And that's why I love something I want to keep working with forever and certainly through this year. That the oppressor is actually seeking the medicine of what he or she oppresses. You know, it's part of the Piscean kind of dynamic of, you know, ollie ollie income free. And it's part of also better a trickster than a martyr. So it's not fair or anything. It's just deep and interesting that you know, England needed the metaphysic of India, you know, and it was through the unimaginative, you know, conquest gods that mingling got to happen. You know, and America needs the underlying beauty of the Middle East underneath everything, the quality of manners and reflection and the whole day woven together with blessing and beauty underneath all of the dementors and all of the war. So, you know, what did this want to be? That's another lecture, okay. We did all that. But you know, it's also that idea of completely reframing refugees as welcome pilgrims. We're all assigned, you know, so I had the great good fortune to, you know, to spend some period of time in Syria with beautiful guide Deborah Felmuth. I know what a deep, profound, beautiful culture it is, how enriching that culture would be, the diaspora. I love, again, the qualities of beauty and ingenuity that we see abounding that we want to report on. I love young Dutch woman textile student goes to the Greek islands where the refugees are washing up and finding the boats and the life jackets and teaching the young kids at first, because kids, then grown-ups follow the kids, to make these really useful backpacks from the life vests and the discarded boats, and the kids all come alive, and we go, ooh, this inventive ingenuity, beauty out of terribleness. Yes, you know, and they were all kind of pumped up, and they were useful. Again, they could carry stuff, and we go, yes, that quality of ingenuity under pressure and collaborating across borders, and, you know, we want, you know, rich tolerance, and we want the this experiment of crossing the borders and then with our magic brooms dissolving the borders. We love E.O. Wilson's book, I haven't read it, but I heard about it, coming out, Half Earth, in which he does a scientific proposal for restoring half of the Earth to nature. We'll call it parks. but still, wildlife corridors and things, you know, smuggle it across borders. So, you know, we do love that. You know, and part of the dynamic, since we're in the Mars realm, but Mars with Venus, you know, turn all aggressive metaphors into having all the fierce play of Mars, but with the liberating beauty dedication of Venus. So I love animating the metaphor that we also, under our chairs, have a quiver full of arrows, you know, and may they be tipped with compassion and cannabis honey, you know, with tyranny as their target. May it go well for you. You know, sudden interest in moss for you. You know, sentenced to 10 years of aromatherapy for you. There we go. Whatever the thing is, more imaginative sentencing. What if we put into the cauldron, you know, our addiction to having an enemy and ladled out, you know, we're all collaborating together, we're all part of each other in some way. What if we put into the cauldron our desire to punish and ladled out our desire to heal? We go, let's play big time. Let's go for the thing. You know, it's an evolutionary experiment. What if all this is, you know, some way we can come out? So I launching, I don't know how many of you people know what the Shift Network is? Okay, right. Oh, okay, your emails are never empty. Right. So they are mega marketers of online spiritual courses, and I had to dissolve my own kind of like resistance to marketing, you know, and money, going, no, you can do it, Caroline, here you go, and shame about marketing and money, going, can I ask people to pay money for things? You know, it's like, yes, easy, this is very important. So I collaborated with them on the 7-week course, and I got to say, I think, you know, they are my Saturn transit, they're tricking me into getting organized, and I'm their Uranus transit, going, hey, you know, and it's a fair trade, but they are so effective. They got that great team of people. The reach is incredible. So we want to partner with everything. You know, let not our harumphatudinous high standards, often a masquerade for our intrinsic indolence and laziness, get in the way of willingness to collaborate with everything. They go, okay, you did the 7-week thing, now do a 7-month thing. I'm like, oh, all righty, okay, here we go. Because it is going to run from April 16th to the day after the election. And I go, all right, I can have enthusiasm for this, you know, to gather. It's, you know, remember, again, in England, right, which has a weird history of tolerated eccentricity in metaphysics, some apocryphal and some historic, but it was said that Dr. John Dee, a brilliantly cultivated, slightly sketchy, interesting, you know, confidant of Queen Elizabeth, a science guy and a history of magic guy. He's credited with conjuring the storm that sunk the Armada, right? It's an apocryphal story, but fun. And then in World War II, what is actually more historically real is the British government collaborated with all the wizards and witches in England, and for them to raise a cone of protection over England to protect democracy from tyranny. I go, okay, I want to do that. But I want to do it with more trickster fun. You know. But how do we explore what can dedicated people do with each other? So it was a year ago, I was here, you know, with wonderful Michael and Jennifer and the Commonweal, and Oren and the Commonweal team. And at the end of the day, somebody said, Caroline, how can we best support you? And I completely blew it. I didn't have an answer. You know, I went into some kind of irrelevant tirade about something or other, you know, and then I was like, I don't know. And I go, so in a fairy tale, I did feel like, you know, to myself, I get thrown out of the Grail Castle, like, oh, and some shame. Like, I didn't even, you know, I teach other people about tangible metaphors and do the thing, and oh, I didn't, you know. But I did use it, going, right, what a good question. And for all of us, how would we all best like to be supported? You know, we really want to work with those questions. And I have some answers now. But you can see me afterwards. But I would love to cahoot. I would love to magnetize really dedicated, up for adventure, metaphysical, fun people to journey with me for 7 months from April 16th to November 9th through this election cycle, just to be influential. So that is one answer. And there's others. But blessings and considerings. The purpose of ritual magic is to spiral into group human mind, expanded wisdom and tolerance. And that we can do in any kind of structure and here now. So my parting formal words, oh, we're pretty good, is, you know, we can do this, team. You know, co-dream the desirable world into being. It's absolutely, we don't want to get smoked on our strong suit, right? Storytelling and power of imagination, compassion and tolerance. That's our forte, you know. So, you know, it behooves all good-hearted people to become ever more effective storytellers. And it's like E.O. Wilson said when he cooperates with kind of right-wing Christians. He says we disagree about science, but they have a spiritual fervor that we're going to need in this mix. You know, and Saturn and Sagittarius square Neptune and Pisces says, you know, I love the example. I use it a lot, but I haven't seen you in a year. You know, is the NASA mission to Pluto was so charming in so many ways. One, it was incredibly ingenious engineers, more women working on that project than any other NASA project. It took 9.5 years for the rocket to reach Pluto, which is witty, because it's 9 steps to the underworld. But the engineers, right, were different. In their public relations announcements, they were animists. They spoke of Pluto with love. They go, it's a planet, damn it, you know, and this should show those Pluto naysayers. And they loved this little rocket. They loved this little rocket. And they put two symbolic things on the rocket. Here's Neptune. Here's Saturn, Sagittarius, science, leading edge engineering, science, knowledge, and Neptune, myth and dream. And they put some of Clyde Tombaugh's ashes on the rocket, he who discovered Pluto. And then even cooler for me, you know, they put a quarter. They put a 25-cent piece on the rocket to pay Charon, Pluto's moon, who is the ferryman in the underworld. And when people die in traditional cultures, right, you put a coin on their lips to pay Charon. So they put a coin, a 25-cent piece on this rocket where every ounce matters. And it's like, go, science guys. And when they... little science mystics, you know, everybody wanted to be a mystic, and every mystic wants to be an intellectual, maybe, storyteller. So when they said, oh, it's going to be the loneliest little rocket in the world, right? Because this rocket was going to do this bold thing of threading the needle between Charon and Pluto, incredible thing. I mean, incredible feat, you know. And they're going to lose contact with it. So they said it's going to be the loneliest little rocket in the world. But we put a quarter on the rocket to pay Charon for safe passage, and then when it emerges, they go, it worked, right? Restoring mythological literacy to science and intellectualism, there we can do it. So really great. So I would invite us all to, you know, be willing to move our emotional default setting to woof woof, want to play, you know. And if somebody doesn't, you spiral on, you know. Nobody really takes offense at that. You know, I really get only positive response, even from right-wingers, from my general woof-woofiness. They're like, oh, what fun. You know, and myth. And they, and it opens up conversation. They go, oh, Joseph Campbell, I haven't read him in years. You know, even though I'm a right-wing dingbat. Oh, let's talk more about that. You know, again, whatever, people are hungry to be fed. And the Scheherazade trickster redeemer in all of us speaks to the hungry ghost in everyone. Says, no, you don't really want dominance. You want this part of you fed. You know, wuzza wuzza. There you go. You know, so, right, so again, part of our aspiration. So we might say together, woof woof, wanna play? Woof woof, woof woof, wanna play? You know, and then I love, you know, there's a lot of the 60s coming alive now. As Mark Twain said, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. So there's a lot of resonance that way. But again, a maturation. So in the 60s, we have the power fist, yeah. You know, but I think what we want to transform that into, coyote hairs, oh wait, here's actual Syrian tobacco. So I think we want to, you know, it's like the power fist into blessing. May it go well for you. It's the Mars thing. We strengthen whatever we oppose. Mars thing, just kidding. You know, Mary Oliver ends one of her great poems, I sing in praise, by saying, I sing in praise to the coyote that came at me with its strong teeth bared and then at the last moment smiled. May this year be that for us. Thank you. Thank you. So we have 15 minutes, don't we, to decide the fate of the world?
15 minutes for briefly phrased questions so we can get
them over there. Yeah. Yes, right.
What was you said?
Dangerous, beautiful assignment. And to turn the poison into tonic, and to go, I wonder why I was given this terrible thing to endure. What poison, what tonic can I brew from it? You know, Ed Tick runs this thing called Sanctuary for the Soul, working with veterans from Vietnam on. He was taking Vietnam veterans back to Vietnam to build the temples they'd bombed, right? That's what heals, the dangerous, beautiful assignment, to do healing ceremony. He says the Odyssey is a manual for how you take veterans home. It takes 20 years, right? All those different adventures. He takes veterans to the Asclepions in Turkey to do dream healing, to turn their poison into a gift to contribute. And then it behooves us to be welcoming. Come, we need you. We need what you've been through. You must have seen a lot. Tell us your story. And here is something in which you can heal yourself by healing the world, by building, rebuilding infrastructure, by being welcomed back. Yeah.
And to our women who have suffered, yes, too, where I have a daughter. She was hurt. And I was like,
well,
how do I turn that?
That would be for her, you know. But I love the only channel I really love is Esther Hicks channeling Abraham or whatever the hell she's doing. She says the best thing we can do for anybody, those we love, those we don't, is to see them connected to their own wise autonomy. I see you connecting to your capacity to heal yourself and brew that poison into tonic. I do. I mean, again, these are not. Glibly earned. I do know from deep underworld experience, I do know that we have a tremendous taboo. you know, things that are sacred have become taboo. Our job to restore them back to sacred. When somebody's undergone great tragedy or been, you know, raped or abuse or terrible loss, people are awkward around it, right? Like, whoa, because you don't want them to get mad at you, and you don't want, you don't know. But people who've gone to the underworld, it is awful. But there is a kinship of people who've undergone. It's like, hey, I see your visa stamped with the underworld. Mine too. How you doing? terrible loss, right? And what heals that? And the thing that heals it most is story. You know, when I had just the saddest thing in the world happen, I had a baby who died, and this woman that I'd heard about, like, she'd had a baby who died, and I was like, oh, that's too bad, right? But you don't really get it. And she was performing on Christmas Eve as Brunhilde in Wagner's Ring Cycle at the Met. And so she invited me, right? So I saw this woman who had undergone what I was undergoing. Like, not like wooza-wooza my trauma. She was like, fucking hell, life. You know, and Coyote, you know, Stella Coyote, who's going to turn 18 on Easter, may it be so, she's doing pretty great. Again, the value of a safe old age to unfold a whole lot of evolutionary intelligence, she's just getting cuter. And our deal is kind of paying off. But she grieved when Captain Moondog, her best friend, our wolfy friend, but she was not sentimental. And she taught me the difference between grieving and sentiment. And for her, the Coyote dynamic, the grieving and the loss increased her appetite for life. I am so grieving, I'm going to live more. Enough. So plants, animals, whatever, I just find that the repetitive use of the word trauma digs people into a deeper pit and isolates them. Oh, your poor trauma, it's terrible. And tiptoe, people tiptoe. You know, and you want somebody on stage doing Brunhilde going, eating a steak and drinking three beers before she goes on for a six-hour performance. Yeah, that was inspiring. She wasn't like, what was my drama? You know, it's like a little Mars medicine. But that's not for you to do. That you to handle your own trauma around the trauma and then, you know, and then throw that into the thing. Your dangerous, beautiful assignment, how to see those you love autonomous. Yeah.
I just wondered if you've had much cross-pollination with restorative justice.
Yeah.
Because you talk restorative justice, but I wonder if you've had any formal contact with anybody that's doing those programs.
Only people admiring it, but yes, restoring the world, right? Again, it is, well, it's, I think we sound like it because it's just a true thing. You know, what if we replaced our desire to punish with informed, reverent curiosity? Goodness, I think we also want to put some desirable templates for Obama's exit. I want Leonard Pelletier pardoned and out on the last day. And I also want John Walker Lind out, right? The American Taliban, this young boy who grows up, you know, in Marin, right, and then doesn't want to be silly and is a serious student of the madrasas, goes, you know, converts to Islam, is beloved in his school, wanders into the Taliban when it was legal to do that, you know, in a war zone, picked up, and then in the terrorist, you know, kind of dynamic is thrown into prison forever. You know, and again, a wise culture would go, good heavens, lad, you must have seen amazing things. Please tell us, we need you. And in the restoring justice, no, but I'm completely open to it. Is that a field you work in?
Well, yes, it's one of the fields I work in. I just think it would be a very fruitful contact both ways. It would be really igniting. Yeah.
Woof, woof. I'm sure it'll happen. That's right. You mentioned it once. We just need two more times, and then it happens, right? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
One more question.
Okay. This is very Eastern European, right? What? I'm sorry. I blew your last line. Can you say it again?
At least we didn't die, so let us be thankful.
That'll do. Thank you. Woof, woof. All right. Oh, one last one. Okay. Is it jolly?
It just came to me. Thank
And thinking.
And thinking. And I'm wondering, I'm not part of this shift.
Oh, but you could be very easily. You could be very easily. Yes, here. Well, it's also like, you know, I think part of, you know, when we see something monstrous out there in the world, like Trump is a monstrous cartoon animation of the worst aspects of American murderous sociopathic vulgarity, going, thank you, a friend of mine always goes, thank you for revealing that poison. But I go, how about if each one of us took a little teeny, teeny micro homeopathic dose of confident bluster, right? You know, and then the Trump monster would just deflate like a giant blancmange, right? Just everybody, not too much, just take a little bit of confident bluster. So, you know, in that regard, going, I'm not afraid of marketing, no, ha ha. Come this way. You know. Right. Well, inner dedication. Well, it will be easy within 5 minutes. You know, inner dedication magnetizes outward opportunity. The more we, again, that's why inner and outer are equal. Backstage and onstage need each other. The inner dedication, like what are you dedicated to, strengthens your, all of our, signal. So you're more likely to be danced into place with those with whom you share a dedication. So at a moment like now, I mean really like now, all around now, you know, to go, I wonder what I'm, you know, each one of us, I wonder what I'm dedicated to. Even the wonder, we don't even need to know, because wonder is a great mudra, you know, it turns our body into magnetizing, you know, chalice of, you know, magnetizing, you know, the lightning of coyote. You know, I wonder how I will, whoa, there we go. It's about to get very fast. It's like the time between lightning and thunder. So which is why it's great to gather now to clarify what we want to connect with, or the quality, or at least to wonder what we want to connect with. Because it is all going to happen pretty. We're in the still moment, right? Equinox still moment, equal night and day, equal Mars and Venus, equal everything, you know, to clarify so that when we step in, then we are connected to the right conversation, the right person. We are the molecules with which the big story speaks with itself through the agency of synchronicity. There's a nice ending. A sandwich. There, we've done it.